Hello and welcome to the Spirituality Finding HP panel discussion. My name is Michelle and I am a compulsive reader. Good morning, everyone. While the topic of this panel is spirituality, finding HP, and the speakers all have experience in this particular area, this panel is open to everyone. We will each introduce ourselves and qualify and speak for 20 minutes on the topic of finding and maintaining a relationship with a higher power, particularly when it is very difficult to do so. Leslie has agreed to be our timer today, and please give each speaker a 10-minute warning and then a 5-minute warning and finally a 2-minute warning. Thank you. Okay, our first speaker is Kate.
Hi, I'm Kate. I'm a compulsive reader. Good morning, everyone. If you don't mind, I would love if we could all say the Serenity Prayer twice, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will not mine be done. Amen. Yeah, I just would like to start off and say I'm so honored to be here. I've been in program since 2008 and got my abstinence, the gift of abstinence I just celebrated my 6th birthday. So that's 6 years of no exercise bulimia, no binging, and no restricting. It was definitely hell for me. Should I talk louder? It was definitely hell for me when I came in. My life was about trying to get skinny every day. And I would end up overeating and then trying to restrict for a few days and then overeating and then trying to run for a couple hours, the whole thing. And I love, love, love this topic, spirituality, finding HP. When I came into the rooms, I had been given the gift of faith. I was raised in a home where there was faith, there was religion, but it was very much we would go to church every weekend. But I didn't have a life-giving relationship with God as I understood Him. I had a few memorized prayers, but there was no personal relationship with God. And so when I came in, I was absolutely on my knees because my life was very good on the outside. It doesn't look much different than it does now. But I was empty on the inside, and I hated myself, and I was aware of that. I just remember feeling numb all the time, just with the food, the exercise. And I remember just thinking, gosh, there's not enough time in the day. If only I could exercise more. If only I was thinner. If only I could just spend more time at the gym. And that to me was hell. And when I came into the rooms, I was told that desperation was a gift, and I was so in awe of the honesty that I heard in the rooms, and that to me, the rooms became my higher power when I came in. And I was told that I could borrow the faith of others, and I really had to put aside my faith, my concept of God when I came in, because I realized I needed a whole new way of doing, a whole new way of being, because my whole way of doing and being, I really thought it was, okay, the goal is to be perfect, the goal is to be loved by everyone, the goal is to be thin, the goal is to do everything right all the time and to have everyone's approval and always be smiling and always be on, and it was so exhausting. And, I mean, just this morning, I love that I can come here and just not have it all together. I drove here with a fellow. I'm kind of diverting here, but and I just told her, I said, well, I had this intention to be this really spiritual person this morning, and I was going to have this amazing morning with God, and I set my alarm to wake up early, and then I ended up sleeping through my alarm and woke up late and realized I had to do a few work emails before I came here. So I was like, wow, I'm not going to be the most spiritual person in the room because I didn't get the morning I wanted. And, you know, and God just gives me so much grace with all that. And forgive me, my share's going to be kind of all over the place. I really put it in the hands of God. I don't know if you saw me, but when some of you walked in, I was on my knees, and I always try to get on my knees as often as I can to just say, oh God, would you just work through me? Would you just come and be with me? And I can do that throughout the day. So even this morning, even though I didn't have this ideal, wow, God morning, so many revelations, oh, it was so good, I'm so connected, I am still connected because I have found in here that God is always with me. And I get to just laugh at when I, you know, have all these intentions to, you know, be super spiritual. And he always reminds me that I am spiritual. Like he made me, and I've learned that we are all spiritual. But anyways, as I digress, just going back to when I came into the rooms, I was so humbled by the fact that I was in a 12-step program, because that to me was the worst thing that could happen to me. Aside from being fat, I thought being in the 12-step rooms was the worst thing that could ever happen to me. My pride was just shot. And I thought, wow, I can't get skinny on my own. And I tried it all, like many of us, from the marathons to the diet programs to not eating to eating grapefruits to whatever, all that stuff, getting hypnotized, plastic surgery, you know, all those fun things. So when I came in, it was such a good feeling to really have that willingness to surrender and to just say, like, okay, my weight, this obviously hasn't been working because I'm in a 12-step room. So, okay, HP, I don't know what you are, who you are, but like, I need a new start. So I was really willing to take the experience, strength, and hope of all of you guys and open my mind to new possibilities. So after being in the rooms for about a month, hiding in the back, wearing my hat, you know, leaving early, ended up getting a sponsor and borrowed her HP. And again, the rooms were my HP. And I then ended up moving and changing careers, going to grad school, things they tell you to not do in the first year. I did. And I found this, I ended up getting connected with a new sponsor, and she had what I wanted with her HP. And she gave me this great assignment in step two. I love step two. Love. I love that we get to be restored to sanity. At any point in the day, I can press the reset button and work step two, right? I can say, you know, I'm powerless. I can't. God, you can. I think I'll let you. You know, steps one, two, and three right there. And her step two exercise for me was firstly to start a bank to track my spiritual experiences. It's like spiritual experiences. Like, I don't really have spiritual experiences. But she said, you know, when you hear someone in a meeting that says something that you identify with, like that's God working in your life. That's HP working in your life. When you can't identify a feeling, but then you hear someone in a meeting articulate it and it hits you in your heart. It's like that, you can add that to your bank. I was like, oh yeah. Okay. That's cool. And ever since then, I've had this bank of spiritual experiences that I've been adding to imperfectly. I've been wanting to add to it lately, and I just moved, so my laptop is somewhere in one of my boxes, but haven't been able to add to it, so I've just been making notes everywhere, because now I'm just, that little step two tool, that exercise, really has trained me to always be looking for, I call them God shots now, HP shots, so I'm looking for how God's moving in my life now, and that's really fun. Like, that makes each day an adventure. When I'm in my HP centeredness, I'm always, you know, looking for like, ooh, butterfly. Oh, okay. I feel God's presence when I see butterflies. And, I'm really thankful for that. So little exercises like that have trained me to look for my higher power. And the other part of step two that I love that she had me do, aside from reading out of the big book and writing on it, was, creating a higher power advert. So if I were to put an advert in a newspaper, what would I want in higher power? And I got to create my own higher power. And I needed that. I didn't know how much I needed it, but I was starving, desperate for higher power that could meet my minuscule needs and my really, really big needs. And I got to do that in step two. I love that. I love that we each get to have our own higher power in here. And for me, the joy it brought me realizing that I could have a higher power that could gently tell me to stop eating. I was like, oh my gosh, I can have a higher power that cares about my meals. And then I can have a higher power that still loves me just the same, even if I don't stop eating when he tells me to stop eating, you know? So I just remember just the joy of discovering, wow, I can have a God that loves me unconditionally, whether or not I listen to his guidance. And I will say, and it did take me, I'd say my first time working through all 12 steps, my sponsor at the time that walked me through those, I learned the muscle of hearing God's voice through and that muscle of taking direction, from someone, something other than myself. I learned that through taking direction from a sponsor, such a plug for sponsorship. Oh my gosh, sponsorship was such a gift and such an honor that, you know, that we all get to then pay that forward and sponsor. Because we get to keep what we give away, right? That's what we're told. That's been my experience. But I really, since I was so desperate, I did take all the direction my sponsor gave me. And then that later on, it just, that willingness transferred to, thank you, transferred to my relationship with my higher power. And because eventually she could sense like, okay, this, that, you know, at one point I would say maybe there was a little codependency that was forming that, we could sense because we were kind of getting too emotionally involved. And that's when, it was time for me to start, bless you, going to higher power even before my sponsor. So that was kind of a uncomfortable transition. So I was so used to just picking up the phone and calling my sponsor right away, which, you know, sometimes I do still do that when it's, I'm just so in the stuff I can't even go to God, but, in the feelings and the discomfort. But I'd say generally now I'm able to go to my higher power first and foremost and then go to a sponsor and go to fellows. And I learned that through that sacred relationship of the sponsor, sponsee. But finding HP. So for me, it really started with step two. It started with coming to meetings and realizing I wasn't alone. And it felt to me every time, even now when I go to a meeting, I feel like I find HP. There's this just acceptance that I naturally don't give myself. And I feel that when I go into the rooms of, God, it's just so nice. I just don't have to have it all together and I can share what's really going on. And just that spirit of authenticity and safety and compassion and tolerance and love. I hadn't experienced that anywhere aside from my late grandmother. And so I really did, finding HP is something I still very much always find in the rooms. And I'm so thankful for that. But just to kind of go back to my experience, strength and hope, my story. So step two, so finding the HP, creating the HP that I wanted, that was the foundation for me. And the HP that I wrote in that advert, gosh, maybe seven and a half years ago now, has evolved. I would say has evolved daily. With the HP that I found, I've discovered that it's like any relationship. It evolves. The more I press into the relationship, the closer we get. The more I get to know my HP. When, like this morning, I didn't give the attention, the focus on my God that. And for those who are going to listen to this recording, I choose to call my HP God, and I have many other names and nicknames, and we've got a very playful, fun relationship. But for the purposes of this, I'll try to stick to HP and God. I just found like my relationship with my mom, my relationship with my colleague, my relationship with my closest girlfriend. The more I sow into that relationship, whether it's through calling, through texting, spending face-to-face time with them, the quality time that I put in, we get closer. And the same goes with my relationship with my HP. If I'm sowing into that relationship, talking to my HP throughout the day, waking up, going to my HP first thing, getting on my knees, taking pauses throughout the day to acknowledge my HP's presence, like that's when I feel connected and I feel like we're really close. When I'm not doing that, I feel like, and I was telling my friend on the way here, I didn't even feel like God was with me the first week of January. And I know today it's not because my HP wasn't with me. It's because I wasn't facing him. It's I have this vision of, okay, my God's always with me. So I can either have my back to him and I can be looking into the darkness, or I can turn around and I can face my HP, my God, who is just this infinite light, and I can just be just basked in the sunlight of the Spirit. But I can either have my back to my HP or I can be facing and just be covered in that love and light and warmth. And last week I felt like not this week, but the week before, I felt like my back was to him. And God, that's just to have that, it almost felt like not separation from my HP, but it just reminded me of how dark it used to be when I came into the rooms, when I didn't know that I had God with me all the time, that God consciousness could be a reality for me, and that I could be free from the disease of compulsive overeating. Where was I even going with that? Yeah, I guess I just want to encourage you that my relationship with God, it ebbs and flows every day, and it's when I am facing him and I'm talking to him and again prioritizing that relationship, I feel like I'm walking on air. I feel like I'm walking on water. Thank you. And I feel like anything and everything's possible. But the first week back, it was such a tough week for me. And I moved, and it was my first week back at work after a few weeks off. And I was grieving, and it was a tough time. And yet God continued to just pour his love on me, and I was still doing gratitude list, but I didn't yet have my little God spot in my home. And how this program works in my life is, I kept making outreach phone calls. I kept talking about it. I felt like God hadn't come to me to the new home kind of thing. You know, I was like, you're only in my old home. And just the recovery was that I kept pressing in. And then finally I had this breakthrough, just in talking about it and in seeking. And really made my higher power the focus of this last weekend, and did some grief work around the move, and it just there was a shift with me and with my higher power, and now there's this beautiful excitement around my new home, and I feel like it is my home. So I just love. I got to press in. I did some step work around it. And again, I'm able to walk through grief in the rooms and not eat, and imperfectly seek my higher power through that time. Like I'll keep seeking. So what that looks like for me is, the first thing I do in the morning, I literally roll out of bed onto the ground and I get on my knees and I just say, thank you, hi, no, thanks for a new day, and thank you for a new day of abstinence. And then sometimes I'll stay on my knees and pray longer. And then sometimes I just get my tea and, you know, wash my face, and then I'll come back and do my little God time. But I think what I'm most humbled by is just how imperfect it all is. How I'll feel so God-centered one day, and then the next day I feel like the beautiful life I had the day before is just like, oh God, like I'm just feeling so intolerant. It's like, oh, what shifted? Like, oh, hi God. Okay, what's going on? And I can take that pause and just check in, and it's usually there's fear going on. I'm tired. I'm feeling overworked. I'm obsessed with doing. I'm obsessed with myself. So I love that in the rooms we get tools that we can practice and turn back toward HP. And there's just been so many difficult times over the last 7-8 years since I've come here, from death to lots of loss in every area to, death, big changes, career changes, heartbreaks, breakups. Thank you. And God has really been faithful through all of it. That's what I was just reflecting on this morning was, wow, you've been faithful. You have been faithful. And some days I feel like I'm the most, wow, I'm so spiritual. I'm so God connected. Oh, this is so good. This is so good. And then again, the next day I'm like, oh man, I don't feel as close. What's going on? The more of God and the less of me, like that is the goal. I'm like, I want more of you, less of me, more of you, less of me. And if I'm in my head obsessing about the size of my thighs and what you think of me, there's no room for God. And my friends in the program remind me, oh, God is a solution. God is a solution. When you're feeling discomfort, when you're feeling fear, God is a solution. And just thank God it doesn't have to be the food today. So, yeah, just from my experience, just continuing to practice that spiritual muscle of going to my HP. For me, that it helps to get on my knees. I love to get on my knees when I leave the bathroom at work. Just before I open the door, I'm always like, okay, what's the next action? What's the next indicated action? And just to have that conversation as if I'm talking with a friend throughout the day, and for me, thank you. Just saying thank you throughout the day to my HP is, I'd say, one of the more powerful tools that I have. And finding HP at the end of my day is always, I'd say that's my favorite time. I'll do a gratitude list at the end of the day. And last night I actually stayed up till way too late, an hour later than I wanted to, because I started making this list of answered prayers and a gratitude list, and I just kept going. I kept going, and I ended up spending an hour on this list, and I just was like, wow, God, wow, and just in awe. And, my prayer is just that I never lose that sense of awe for my HP. So thank you. That's all. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Kate. Hi, I'm Michelle, compulsive overeater. It's always great to hear you, Kate. Thanks for your share. I really appreciate it. I'm really grateful to be here today. This is an honor and a pleasure. And just to briefly qualify, I've been in program since July of 2011 officially. I got a sponsor pretty much right at that time. I've been up and down the same 25, 30 pounds for many years, and now, by the grace of God, I'm down those 25, 30 pounds, and I've been given the gift of exercise through this program and connection through this program, a bigger life in the way of knowing more people and being of service, understanding that service has different definitions in different situations, but to have a better sense about that. And to have the, like, if you would have told me even as recently as, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, like right before coming to program, that I'd be on a Saturday morning at 9 o'clock sitting in a hotel in Los Angeles talking to a group of people, I would have been like, no, I think you're looking in the wrong crystal ball. So it goes to show you that that's God for sure working in my life. So, you know, I was having a conversation with my sponsor about doing this panel, and one of the things she said is, well, it's sort of like what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, specific to your experience with your higher power. And so I thought, okay, that's a good way to think about it, that, you know, what it was like. I mean, when I was a kid, I had no sense of a higher power. I mean, I had you couldn't call it a religious upbringing, but, I mean, I went to the sort of outside school of what faith I was born into, but my parents were not religious people. I did so resistantly. I remember actively saying things like, I don't believe in God. I remember when I was a kid, this friend said, ooh, I'm going to tell your mother. I'm like, well, tell her. Like I don't, you know. So I had this almost rebellious attitude about it. But then it became less, I just didn't feel like anybody had my back. You know, I guess it was that sort of thing. So then when I was an adult, I started reading certain things, and I began to observe synchronicity. And I think, you know, I guess there's a lot of ways to think of what does synchronicity look like, and sometimes it's a God shot, sometimes it's just seeing the timing in things, and seeing that I came to believe, even before program, that it was an arrogance to assume that we're all that is. I mean, and I know a lot of people believe differently, and I'm not making, it's not a judgment call. Just for me, I came to that conclusion of like, wow, like, human beings, we're such, you know, if you really kind of step back and look, it's this, we're just sort of these odd creatures, but we think we're the only thing that exists. So I started to have a different sense about what a higher power might look like, and how, like, hindsight is 20/20. And so to look at things that happened in my life, I could see, wow, there was some kind of a power that seemed to be coordinating things. And I didn't think, well, not that they all turned out very well, but it seemed like, you know, there was something. But then, the thing that I couldn't get out of my head about was there were, you know, there was all this stuff of, you know, not good enough, not, you know, this is wrong, that's wrong, never seeing, never understanding to look at gratitude. Or gratitude only came when, oh, something good happened, so I can be grateful for it, but it's just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And so that's, you know, that's where food came in. I mean, certainly food was the comfort, it was the sort of way to cope with life, and it obviously was not, it doesn't serve, and, you know, but I didn't learn that until I came to program, that there was a way to be without food. But to tie that all together, to have God be the way to not be with food, again, that was not in any possible, you know, remote version of a world for me to think of. And it's funny, I would look at other people, because, I mean, I guess 25, 30 pounds, like on me, 25 or 30 pounds looks like I can be go from a size 14 to a size 4, okay? And so I had all those different sizes in the closet. And but I thought even with that sort of variation in size, I would look at other people who are much, say, larger than I thought, well, they have the problem. I don't really have, I just need to lose a little weight, you know? And so I didn't realize that the people who had to lose 100 pounds and me were the same. We have the same problem. We have exactly the same problem. I just didn't know that. And again, I didn't know that there was a God to help me with anything in my life, let alone that. But there was a God. I mean, somehow there was a God working things out, you know, kind of pulling the strings and being the puppeteer, but it wasn't real personal. I guess that's the thing. And so then it just started to become more personal. And I began to observe synchronicity. And so now, you know, to be in program, what that looks like is I could never meditate before program. But when I first came in, one of the first things my sponsor told me to do is to pray and meditate every day. And so I thought, okay, I guess I can pray. But I resisted getting on my knees initially. It took me a while to do that, partly because my religion of origin, which I'm not observant of, that was a sort of an ingrained thing. You don't get on your knees. But you know what? Now I get on my knees. I do it. And I even do it in places where if I'm feeling, you know, out of control or really, like, upset, I'll do it in a public restroom. I'll get on my knees. You know, I'll go in the stall and I'll do that, as disgusting as it may seem. But I'll do that just to connect to my higher power. And meditation, you know, I was so desperate and in such a bad place when I came to program that I was willing to do anything. You know, there's nothing like the gift of desperation to connect one to one's higher power. And that's kind of how it works for me. I think when I'm most desperate, then I'm so willing to surrender. It's all about the surrendering part. You know, I mean, you can be compliant and do all these different acts, and they help you tune in to the higher power that's always there. But it's the act of it's the really feeling it. And some of my spiritual experiences that I've had in program have been all about that complete and utter surrender. And then once I'm in that place, it feels so good. No matter what's happening around me, it's like there's like a peace that comes over me. And I think then the mind starts working though. How can I keep it? You know, and that's the thing, is you can't keep it. This too shall pass. This is the thing. But I can still tune in. So the meditation part, back to that, is I could never really connect to my higher power before. I would try to meditate. I'd use tapes. I'd use different things. And it was always, I'd always either fall asleep or my head was so busy that I could not relax enough to connect. But now, you know, even though my head's still very busy, and sometimes, I mean, I'm not saying every meditation is like a spiritual experience, but usually there's some point in the meditation where I can connect, even for a few seconds. And that is enough for me to know, okay, God, you're there, you're guiding me, and I just have to relax. Because, see, here's the thing, is that what's the difference between God's will and my will? How do I know the difference? Well, one way is that God's will doesn't speak through heightened emotion. If I'm kind of screaming in my head and I'm upset, that's not the best way to hear what the guidance is. So hence the need for meditation to calm that kind of aching and crazy and spinning, you know. So, but even with that, I'm an impatient person, and so I want to hear the answer immediately. I want to know. I want to know what's going to happen. What am I supposed to do? But you know what? The thing I've learned is that happens in God's time as well. And it'll happen. There'll be an answer. There'll be a resolution. It may not be the one I think it should. It may not look like what I think it should look like. It may be completely different. But there will be some kind of answer in God's time. And it's happened enough times that these answers come. And, you know, and sometimes it's for bigger things in life where I'll have a big question like, God, what should I do? Should I stay here? Should I go here? And, you know, I'm originally from Chicago, and I only moved to California 10 years ago. And, you know, when we moved, there were a lot of big decisions to make at that time of, you know, I was kind of really changing my what my profession looked like. We basically sold everything, sold the farm, and moved here. And it took a long time to do that. And I would toil every day wondering, God, like, am I supposed to go? Am I not supposed to go? How am I supposed to stay here? And it was like, just be patient. Because you know what? When it was time to happen, it all happened like that. But because I didn't know when it was going to happen, it seemed interminable. How's this ever going to happen? But then it did. And so sometimes you get the things you say you want, and you get them, but they just happen in God's time. So I never regret for a minute that I moved here, but some of the worst things of my life have happened since I've lived here. But you know what? It wasn't a geographic. I was meant to be here. I was meant to move here, and partly, I think, to be in program and to change my life in this way. And, you know, but along the way, there were all these sorts of things that it just seemed impossible, or it seemed like, how's this ever going to work out? Thanks. But it does. And again, but it's not in my time. So I can beat my head against the wall and wonder, you know, how's this ever going to work? Or I can relax and take it easy, like it says in the big book, and that doesn't mean I'm being passive and not working or not doing my part. It just means that when there's nothing specific that you can do, do nothing. Sometimes the act of doing nothing is what has to happen, you know. And so here's like a smaller story about synchronicity or how God works in my life. That you know, God speaks through people is one way. And so recently I heard about an outside book from like five different people in program that they were like, one person sort of randomly told me, and again, nothing's random, but, oh, I'm reading this book and I'm decluttering my house. And see, clutter is kind of a problem for me. I'm, you know, like I can be organized in many ways, but it's followed me for a long time. And I've had times of extreme cleanliness, and right now I'm in a time of clutter, you know. And so five different people have told me about this book to, like, declutter. And I thought, well, that's no accident. And so one fellow actually loaned me the book. I started reading it, and how God works is I became willing to actually do the things that are there. Now, it's not program literature, so I'm not going to tell you the name of it, but it was God works through giving me willingness to do things. And it may seem like a small thing, but it's a big thing, because I've been kind of stuck for a few years now. And that's the funny thing about program is, in many ways, as big as my life's gotten in many ways, it stayed very small in certain ways. Like, like a lot of people talk about, oh, I got the job of my dreams and my career changed. You know, for me, when I moved here, my career changed and it was what I wanted. But things didn't work out real well the way I thought they would. But the irony of that is what I thought I wanted when we first moved here was to, I'd wanted like a half-time job where I could, you know, and that's exactly what I have now. But it's not exactly what I want now. So it's funny how things shift. But I guess, like, the whole point of that is, I get willingness to get, I'm having willingness to get unstuck. And so I can trust that it's in God's time. If there's something more for me to do career-wise or whatever that looks like it's hard for me to believe, like, okay, this is it, like, you'll never do anything else different again. It's hard to believe that that's really true. So I kind of get in the sense now that God wants me to do these things to get unstuck. And, like, this decluttering is, like, one of them. It may seem like a small thing, but I think it actually may open things up to be willing to do that and to change my life. So, you know, I've started doing that, and what was interesting is the order of things is to go through your clothes first. And so I had all these clothes sitting around, and I've done this before. It's not like I haven't gotten rid of clothes in the last several years, but, you know, since I've had physical recovery, which has been a couple years now, I was scared to get rid of my big clothes, you know, because I thought, well, I might need them. Like, what if I gain weight again? Or, you know, but here's the other reality about that is, even if that happens, I will never wear any of those clothes that I had before again, because I don't like them anymore, you know. And some of them were like pants for work, and like, they were kind of expensive. I think, but somebody else can use them, you know. And so yesterday I became willing. I thought, there's no accident of timing. I went through a bunch of that stuff, and I pulled out the size 14s and the size 12s and the size 10s, because right now, by the grace of God, not wood, God, I'm a size 4, and so that's what I wear. And so consistently, when I go shopping for clothes, I can put those on and they fit me. So I don't need the 14s anymore. I don't need the 12s anymore. Someone else can use them, hopefully. Or maybe they don't like the pants either. But, you know, but you know what? I took them out of the closet. I took a bunch of things that had been sitting around. I put them in bags. And I hurried up. Bless you. I hurried up and I drove over to the Goodwill. And I got rid of them before I'd get a chance to change my mind, you know. And then I got a bunch, and it was like on a roll, and it was like it really felt good to get rid of those things and to thank them for their service and to be grateful. And, you know, and I feel like it's freeing up some energy to help me move forward, you know. And sometimes it's small things like that. It doesn't seem like a big deal to clean out your closet. But, you know, like I don't like to let go, you know, and that's it's a tangible act of letting go. And so, you know, thank you. The whole thing is, it's about letting go and letting God. And I learn how to do that every day, but I need reminders, you know. I have to come back. I go to a lot of meetings. I'm in more than one program. You know, I have to be reminded on a daily basis that I'm not alone. Because, see, that's part of my disease, is to think I'm alone, to think no one cares, to think, you know, all those kinds of things. And it's certainly self-pity. I have to, you know, like in the big book, it talks about us being sensitive people as addicts, but that we should work to not be so sensitive. You know, it's like it's good to be sensitive in some ways, But when it holds you back and it keeps you from living your life, keeps you isolated, then we have to take contrary action. I feel like, for me, so many times everything's a contrary action. It just doesn't come easily. And maybe that's not obvious to people. Sometimes people say to me, oh, that doesn't seem so easy for you. But it's really not. It's not easy. So the two things I've learned in this program, it's gratitude and service. And so I make a gratitude list every day. You know, it's part of a 10th step. But at the very least, I do the gratitude list. You know, I make outreach calls. I have sponsees. I am sponsored. Again, as Kate just said, you have to give away, give it back so that you can keep it. And, you know, every time a sponsee calls, even if I can't pick up, I feel gratitude that this person is calling me. You know, I feel that gratitude. You know, I can't sit here and tell you I work a perfect program. I think it's a pretty good program. Certainly not perfect. There's a lot of lessons to be learned. I've learned so many lessons interacting with people in this program, and not all of them have been pleasant. You know, it's not easy. I mean, I can't sit up here and tell you that this is always easy to work this program. There's some, you know, some difficult things, and that's what this is about. Is, you know, how do you sort of connect with your higher power when things are going rough, you know? Because it's easy when things are okay. Oh yeah, I'm feeling the peace now, everything's fine. But you know what I have to tell you, I have difficulty like on a daily basis, you know? So I mean, I'm sort of a depressive, negative person, you know? So I have to work hard to not be that person or to fight it, you know? And like I'm a great troubleshooter and a great lawyer against myself. I'm always looking for how it's wrong, how I did something wrong, like why this person doesn't like me or why I don't like them. And, you know, and where I have to stop and ask what is right. And that's a God thing. What is right? What am I grateful for? How to, and again, when I need a reminder, I need to get on my knees. I'll do that sometimes randomly in the day. And, you know, there's the power of prayer with others. And that's why being in meetings is really so powerful. And being, even at, like at home, you know, my partner is not in this program, but we're in another program together. Thanks. And sometimes we'll get on our knees together at home and pray together, you know, because it's powerful. Because sometimes when I'm hurting, like there's no, like sometimes, you know, another person can't comfort you. It has to come from a higher power. And, you know, and it's funny, the WANAD thing about, it's not something I've done until recently. Someone suggested doing that. And so I wrote this whole one ad for my higher power. And, you know, it was funny. The insight I got from that was, you know, not that the higher power can't do all those things, but that I had been looking for all those things from other people. And sometimes other people can give you one or a few, or in appropriate times they can give you all of those things as needed, but not consistently. Like it's too much to ask from one person to do all those things that I listed that I want a higher power to do. So really what makes sense is to just ask the higher power to be that for me and not ask too much from others. So there's everything about this program is balance. And, you know, to be connected, to be here, to work the program, but not expect too much out of others. Because, again, that leads right into resentments. Because I was a resentment, a walking resentment coming in here. And now that's better. I've had a lot of relief from my resentments. And so for anybody, if you're new, keep coming back. That's the only thing. There's no wrong way to work this program. There's no wrong way to connect with your higher power. The only thing wrong is to just resist doing it or not do anything. So just, I shouldn't say that. Doing nothing is sometimes the right action. But, you know, just, I'll wrap up. Thank you. I'm just grateful to be here, and I'm going to keep showing up. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm a compulsive overeater and OA enthusiast, and I'm feeling especially enthusiastic this morning. And my intention is to be of good service to all of you here in the room and also those that are listening through the mic. Enthusiasm, as far as I know, it comes from, I think it's a Greek word, which means, it says enthus, which I think means in God. So my intention is to, from jump, be in God with all of you and to share my experience about spirituality and how it's benefited my life and changed the way that I, the way I live, the way I behave with food, the way I behave with my friends, my family, and the world. I hope that gives you inspiration. And inspiration, I think, is also a Greek word. I think it comes from inspiro, which means to be in spirit. So at the end of this, my big goal, hopefully, is to leave you with some inspiration and happiness and excitement for a really good time with your higher power, with your God that helps you recover day to day. So I want to introduce myself just a little bit. I do want to focus mostly on my spiritual life, but to qualify, I think I had my first binge maybe around 4-ish. I think it's important to say because it was there was shame involved, and part of my deal is shame. I eat secretly, and I eat foods that I wouldn't want you to see. And there are foods that I don't actually really want to eat. You know, something biologically, I know that it wasn't right to do, but I had the glitch in the giddy up, right? I had that little glitch in the brain that made me want to do it anyway. That experience was knowing that there were chocolate chips in a pantry in the house. And at 4, I quietly moved myself into the pantry and got in the pantry and closed the door and had some chocolate chips. So you guys can kind of imagine the weather forecast here. At the end of the story, right, is that my parents are like, okay, it's a little too quiet for a 4-year-old in the house. And I was caught eating these chips, and it was embarrassing. And that's kind of been a lot of the story, you know, is, you know, eating foods that were not healthy choices. And that just made me feel bad. And the impact of that was physical weight gain, you know, ups and downs of 30 pounds or so. And then the mental part, which is probably the worst, right, is that what I've learned in these programs and through pursuing a psychic change, a spiritual change, is that my brain doesn't work right. And if I start eating certain types of foods or engaging in certain types of thoughts, my head will get set on fire and I'll start doing what I call mental sneezing and mental coughing. And that looks like self-obsession, guilt, or anxiety. It's an allergy. It's a response to eating these foods or to engaging in certain types of dangerous thoughts that only make problems. So I also want to say, oh, more friends are coming in the room. Hi, everybody. To all those out there listening, I just want to speak to you through the mic that I'm sitting in front of probably like 25, 30 OA buddies. Everybody looks fantastic. If you're out there, if you're in a place in a part of the world where maybe there's not that many meetings and you're relying on these podcasts, I just want to let you know that I'm thinking about you and that my heart goes out to you. And I'm giving you a big high five, and I'm going to just let you know that there's probably 30 people that are going to high-five you, too. So take that energy and make a good abstinent day. Going from there, let's see what I want to talk about. This panel, in my judgment, is the most important panel. It is all throughout the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It talks about spirituality all the way through. That without that relationship with God, without that psychic change, my chances are less than average. So my opinion is those that chose to come into this room or those of you that chose to download it and listen to it are wise, because it's really the central tenet of the whole deal. And so my kind of brief definition of spirituality is quite simple. I would just say that spirituality is a relationship with God, and that I'm asked to pursue that relationship. And that if the relationship's good and we're intimate and we're talking and we're hanging out, we're doing stuff together, I'm taking God along the way with me, then good things happen. And just like in life, when I neglect relationships, I don't hang out, I don't make the call or ask people how they're doing, then the relationship will go distant and there will be problems. And in the world of recovery with my higher power, who I choose to call God, if I'm not close, you know, my brain is just designed a certain way, and that's, you know, accepting the things that I cannot change. My brain is created and designed a certain way that's got a little glitch in it, and it sees things backwards. It sees that without God and without a program, that food is the answer to my problems. And it's just not true. We can look at all of Steve's depth charts throughout the years. If we were to graph it all, it would reveal that Steve working on his own without a higher power is not very effective. And it is really quite effective when I'm pursuing that relationship with God. So I made a lot of notes here. I'm probably going to go all over the map. Maybe we'll start a little bit with my morning. You know, this morning I woke up and it kind of hit me that I had been asked to sit on a panel at the OA birthday party and talk about this for 20 minutes. And then it hit me. I was like, wow, man, this is kind of like sort of important. You better like come up with something. So I started my day with the routine that I normally do, which is to meditate. So I did a 5-minute meditation. And what came out of the meditation, and this is kind of what happens for me, is the praying part for me, I sort of see it as like a phone call. When I'm praying, that's me talking to God. And then when I'm meditating and I'm quiet, that's God talking to me back through the phone. And meditation has been a real gift and something that I can be spiritually lazy around. And what I'm guilty of is I'll just sort of, you know, make a call, if you will, and pray, kind of say what I need. And then I just sort of get off the phone and I don't wait for the answers. And so I was meditating this morning. I was waiting for the answers to come back. And what I heard was all about relationship. That I want a relationship with God, and I was thinking about you guys, and I want all of you to have that relationship also. So I moved on from there, and I did my big book reading. My sponsor right now and I are going through the big book a paragraph at a time. And so I read from the second edition forward, and I'm going to sort of summarize basically what it said. Is a flare broke out in 1935 in Akron between a stockbroker and an Akron physician. 6 months earlier, the stockbroker had been relieved of his obsession to drink by a sudden spiritual experience. We're talking about Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. And he came to figure he needed to do a rigorous moral inventory and that it was necessary for a belief and dependency on God if he were to stay healthy and sober. Right? So from the very beginnings, like that was like one of the famous moments, is that he had this spectacular and sensational spiritual experience, right? Through I think his friend through the Oxford group or something like that, and the concept and the idea of the big book of Alcoholics was formed. And like I said, so it is throughout the book, you know. So I was sort of looking at these places in the book that where it's very clear, places like in the meetings where you hear it, or places where your sponsor directs you to read it. One of those is my favorite one. I'll just start from there. Is in the doctor's opinion, when Dr. Bob Silkworth is defining addiction, and at the end of what he basically says is that unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. And I've really found that to be true. If I'm just going to white knuckle it and do diet pills and 2-a-day workouts and making deals and charts up on the mirror and things I'm crossing out and, you know, willing myself, I fail, right? It says it very clearly. Without the psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. It also says in How It Works, which most meetings read, I think, the ones I do attend read it. It says, without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. It's all over. If you're just slow enough, and oftentimes I'm too quick, I just glaze right over it, and I don't actually hear that it's saying it again. Right? You need this relationship. You need this relationship. You need this relationship. You need this relationship. Actually, was just as I was going through after my meditation, after my writing, I was just having a little glance at the steps, and I noticed for the first time, which is sort of embarrassing. I would have liked to have said that I've noticed this from the beginning, but that wouldn't be true. Is that Steps 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 11, and 12 all make reference to God. Step 2 uses the word a power greater. Step 3 uses the word God. Step 5 uses the word God. Step 6 uses the word God. Step 7 uses the pronoun him. Step 11 uses the word God. And 12 says spiritual. So it's really all throughout. It's really all encompassing. It's really the central tenet. It's really what it's all about. I've never been able to do it alone. I haven't. I've temporarily succeeded on diets or over-exercising. I've tried many strategies to control my weight, and ultimately, what happened is I would gain the weight back and more. So I want to talk a little bit about sort of the main questions, which is how do I find God? And once you found God, how do you maintain that? And then when it's hard to, and then what do you do when it's hard to keep that relationship? And I'll tell you a little about what I do. First of all, I want to just introduce my higher power. And what I would say is that my higher power is the bomb. My higher power is very cool, is very accepting, very loving, very insightful, very available, very creative, very interested in me. Wants me to win, wants me to have a good life. I have a higher power that really, really cares. And all I have to do is choose. And my first sponsor would say about that, he'd say, Steve, that's great, but the higher power will not compete. The higher power will not compete. And what he meant was he said, you know, if you choose to go off plan or not to hang out with God or, you know, break your abstinence, God will allow you to do that. He'll just kind of let you do that. But when you want to come back, you can come back right away. That stuck in my head, and it helped me to never leave the rooms, never leave the fellowship. So I, as a kid, never had any difficulty cultivating a higher power. That was always something that just was pretty natural for me. I come from a mixed faith home. Both parents are not particularly religious, but were spiritual. And I took a little bit of a grand tour of religion, and I saw where there was cool stuff going on. But mostly it just sort of came natural to me. So I did not have, in my experience, too much of a struggle. It just sort of just came easy, like I said. And what I've done to continue to find God is pay attention. You know, I think when I pray, when I choose to connect and pray, you know, and ask to be shown things and then actually go out and look for them, I find them. You know, what I find to be true is if you look for it, you'll find it, you know, good and bad. And so there's that. And then there's the meditation, right? The meditation is finding the God there too, is that when I'm quiet enough, and it doesn't always happen, sometimes I'm just in a hurry or I'm not in the right mindset for it, but I'll get messages, you know, I'll get messages, and I just trust my stomach, my heart, my head, that it's divine information. I just trust. And if you have any struggles with that, I totally get it, but my experience is, and my encouragement is to chance it and trust that, you know, that this is information for you that's going to help you. You know, and if it doesn't go right, I think it says something, and maybe it's the promises or something where we made a bad choice here. But all in all, you know, things work out when we keep ourselves spiritually aligned. So that's kind of a lot of what I do there, the obvious stuff. And then the rest is, you know, I try to have gratitude. I try to appreciate small things like cold weather in LA. Like, we don't get that. You know, it's like, wow, I get to wear a jacket today. This is kind of different. You know, and having like a gratitude or paying attention to nature. Like, that's one of the ways I find God, is just seeing the majesty of the earth, like the ocean, or the smell of salt coming off the water, or the smell of trees, whatever it takes. Or a lot of times it happens when I'm running. I'll be running and my body feels good and I feel my body, and the right song comes on my iPod, and then I let it rip and I turn up the speed a little bit and I feel that connection, and it feels spectacular, right? And so there's just so many right ways to do it. There's infinite right ways to continue to find and connect to God. Moving on to the second question, which is, once you found God, you know, how do you maintain it? Well, I think, you know, probably given the answer away earlier, maintaining means having a relationship, right? This is all about relationship, right? The problem before for me was my primary relationship, my higher power, was food. And I was making that the be-all, end-all, right? And that changed when I made the decision to have this intimate and close relationship with God. And it really is, you know. I talk, and God listens, and then I listen, and God talks. I give God a high five, a hug, a kiss, whatever, whenever I need to. And I hear it through other people. I see it through different events that happen, or on, you know, those days where we're reading something on the big book, and it's, or any other OA literature, and it's exactly what I'm supposed to hear that day. And everybody in this room and everybody who's listening through the mic has had that experience where whatever we're reading is on exactly what we're supposed to be thinking about, or that we need help with, right? And looking for that, and that's part of the deal as well. So I lost my way there for a second, talking about maintaining. Yeah, so it's a relationship, right? That's what I was saying. It's no longer a relationship with my addiction, but a relationship with God, right? Being intimate, being close. And you know, the ways of doing that too can be behavior also. Can be like, you know, I'm going to go for a run with God, or I've done this one, I'm not embarrassed to say it. Like when I'm really nervous about something, I will strap the passenger seatbelt for God to sit in the car next to me, right? I was like, God, I need you here with me in the car while we're driving because I'm really, really nervous. I had to do this in 2010. When I came back from San Francisco, I had been divorced and I began dating again, and I was like, you know, terrified of what was going to happen. I was like, God, I just need you to be here with me on this date. You know, help me hold this girl's hand or give her a kiss or whatever's going to happen. I need you to help me do it all. Okay, I've been warned that I have 2 minutes, so I better get to the last part. So, when it's hard to keep the relationship, million-dollar question, right? When it's hard to keep the relationship, my answer to that, my experience is, Steve, do it anyway. Stop being so egotistical and lazy. You know, like, you gotta plug in. Stop running away. You know, it's a lot of it's my own BS. Like, I'm full of it sometimes. Or I'm angry. I didn't get my way on something. Or I don't feel like things played out the way they should. And I run away, you know. And so a lot of it is just kind of getting over my ego and just saying, you know what, Steve, enough. Enough already, right? Do it anyway. You need to check in. And if you don't do that, you're going to get yourself in trouble. And it may not be today or tomorrow or next week, but you're going to slip if you don't do it. So a lot of it is, I guess, my own kind of kick in the butt, you know. I'm also, you know, fairly supportable, so I'll ask people. I'll tell them I'm struggling with this, and then that helps me kind of plug back in. You know, I'll hear it through my OA buddies, and that'll help me, you know, get back in there when it's hard. But all in all, what I want to say is that it's especially important when it's hard. That's the moment, right? That's the moment. Like if I would say, whatever, you're married or something, it's really a big fight or something, that's when your vow really comes alive if you're committed to this, to your partner. Is the same thing, right? It's getting hard. It's really stressful. You're pissed. You're unhappy. You're sad, whatever it is. And I have to say, you know what? This is when my commitment comes really alive, and I'm going to pursue God no matter what, because I know that I need this relationship, and without it, eventually, I'm going to get in trouble. That is my time. I hope that you heard something useful and that you walk away with a bit of inspiration, and I look forward to talking to you all after the meeting.
Now is the time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand and I will call on as many questioners as possible. Your questions can be directed at one person specifically or generally for the panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording this panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. Who would like to ask the first question? And just as a note, at 18 minutes, we'll call for the final question. Who's first? Yes. Is that directed toward all of us? The question is asking about our abstinence and how we got. Could you say that again?
Getting abstinent in your food, like, can you pray for the
Okay. Okay. The question is again, how to get abstinent? Any inspiration around putting the food down and praying to God and getting willingness? And I guess what I would say about that, it took me 2 years to have physical recovery and to be willing. I was willing initially. My sponsor told me to do 3 meals with 2 optional snacks, so I was willing to do that, and that was a difference from one long meal all day long. But they were kind of big meals and big snacks because I was afraid to be hungry, so I didn't really lose weight. In fact, I maybe gained a little weight and went up and down. But, I mean, the good news was is I didn't gain 50 pounds, which I was on track for, given how I felt coming in here. But what happened was is a couple years later, it happened to coincide with step 9 and 10 is when I started losing weight. And also, so I became willing at that point to do exercise and then consequently put the food down. And some of the exercise came because I had hurt my elbow, and I needed to go to physical therapy. And I realized when I was there that, you know what, I need to do more strength training. And I've always been a bike rider, but so I started doing strength training regularly and then biking even more. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to do all this work, then I got to really be willing to put the food down. Because, I mean, I've done a million diets. Everybody's done that, and they work, but it never is sustainable. But now, because one day at a time and working the program, it's that willingness that the weight came off, and now it's staying off pretty consistently. So, here, did you want to?
Okay, just as a reminder, so the question was, how do I get abstinent with food and using my higher power to do that? My experience is that I know what the food item is that I'm having a hard time with, obviously. And I know if it's a time of day that is like a witching hour where I'm vulnerable. Mine is about 3 to 4-ish where I'll screw up. Or is it a certain place, a restaurant, a gas station, convenience store, right? We don't do grocery shopping at gas stations. Right? So it could be that place, right? Or it could be a time of day, or it could be a person, right? Or it could be alone, right? And it's important to know, like, what that is, what it is, what that time is. And then, really, this program is really about one moment at a time, one single esteemable act at a time, right? And so identify what that is, anticipate it, right? Forecast it in the weather. It's coming. Like, wear the right clothes for it. And then all you have to do is make it through one time. Make it through one time. You know, ask God, like, okay, it's 2:30. 3 o'clock is coming, and I'm going to start getting weird, right? I know it's coming, and I need you to be with me, please. My brain doesn't work correctly. Give me the right juice to call somebody, call my sponsor, write something down, go outside, stand on my head, you know, read some poetry, check my email, whatever it takes, right? Get me through this one time, and then I'm going to celebrate the shit out of this. I'm going to call my sponsor. I'm going to call my fellows. I'm going to share this in a meeting, and I'm going to tell people that I did this one time, and I'm going to try to do it again. Right, and I think that asking God, like loading God up into that thing, whatever that food item is, the time, whatever, that has helped me just accrue small victories. And it's those small little steps and those small little victories that you know bring you down and going down to the right direction.
Thank you both. Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Yeah, for me, I was just trying to remember, just because I remember that desperation that I had before I got abstinent, because it took me about a year and a half to get more than a couple months. And for me, I had the gift of desperation, but I've had sponsees who don't have it, and so my sponsor has told me to encourage them to pray for the gift of desperation, because I, from my experience in the rooms, prayer does work, and being desperate is a gift. And because I had the gift of desperation, I was willing to take sponsored direction, and so I took a lot of contrary action, and I even still do. I do a lot of contrary action, and that, so I'd say gift of desperation, sponsored direction. I was given this abstinence prayer that I'd be happy if anybody wants to give me their email addresses after, I can send it to you. But for my first couple years, I would say this abstinence prayer on my knees, sometimes throughout the day, sometimes a dozen times, because I could feel how fragile my abstinence was, sometimes hour by hour, and the prayer went something along the lines of, God, would you increase my desire for you and for peace? Would you make it greater than the desire to eat? Would my hunger for you be greater than my hunger for the first compulsive bite? And I was taught to pray for the willingness to pick up the phone before picking up the first compulsive bite. Because if I didn't pick up the first compulsive bite, then I wasn't going to binge. I wasn't going to compulsively eat. So it was all about that first bite and going, leaning on my sponsor, leaning on my higher power, leaning on the fellowship to do whatever it took to not pick up the first bite, because then I was off and running. So usually it was just getting on my knees and making a phone call and being like, help, I want to eat my face off right now. I'm so uncomfortable. And they say, what's going on? I'd be like, oh, I'm feeling like I'm not enough. I'm overwhelmed. Da, 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 da. And then I would end up listening to what was going on with someone else, and I wouldn't end up binging. So I think for me, it was just being willing to take action, whether picking up the phone, doing something program based before picking up the first compulsive bite was a huge game changer for me. Hope that helps.
Next question.
Thank you for that. Thank you. From my experience, I was encouraged to ask my higher power for eyes to see him and for a heart to experience him. I choose to call my HP him. I was told, ask God to reveal himself to you. Ask God to give you eyes to see him throughout the day. Ask God to reveal more of himself to you. And he has. So for me, it was just about asking my HP for that, and more intimacy and greater vision came, and we continue to get closer. So I think for me, just asking my HP for whatever I need. Would you help me understand you more? Would you help me see you? Hope that helps.
So again, the question is getting lost in the analytical part of praying to a higher power. So what exactly are you praying to? And for me, I'm a pretty analytical person as well. And but I really resist the urge to analyze it. I kind of just don't. And I just I think about God as being this energy, and an energy that's greater than my little tiny human brain. You know, whatever analytical skills I have are not even on a scale that can compare to the energy that has created this universe. So I guess I just think, I don't even try to comprehend it. I don't even try. So it's just incomprehensible, I guess that's all I can say.
Yeah, my experience on the form of higher power is, because what I say to myself is, God is inside me and all around me. Right, so it can be formless or form. Like, I don't necessarily have to have an object. It can be formless. Right, just it's all encompassing. Right, and that's okay. And so I might say, you know, like my friend here, Michelle, to encourage you to sort of not try to put aside the analytical part and just enjoy as best you can the connection that you're making in that moment, that relationship. Also, just as a kind of sidebar, I want to just address those that have an agnostic or atheist experience, which I don't, but my thought around that, especially in working with different sponsees who have had that struggle, is is this portion in We Agnostics where it just says something like, we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Right? So what it says is, even if you're struggling with that, even if it's kind of unclear, you're not really sure, just the mere decision to say, okay, I'm willing to say that maybe something cool can happen, the results commence immediately. And at the end of the chapter, then it says, even though it felt impossible to find or comprehend, that power which is God, God then revealed himself. As we drew near, something like that, we drew near and then God revealed. So that's some of my thoughts, just jumping off the question.
Yes. Okay, the question is, what is the what is it about getting on one's knees that would increase a spiritual experience? I mean, for me, again, it's more about surrender. It's about putting down my ego or my resistance. I think it's just being willing to go along with. I guess it's almost like a sense of like living life on life's terms. It's being willing to accept and being willing to be humble, because I mean, yeah, not that you, I think you can pray no matter what position you're in. If you can't get on your knees, if you have a physical inability to be on your knees, you can still pray if you're standing up or sitting down. I don't know that that necessarily has to matter, but I think it's an act of being willing. It's an act of humility. I guess that's.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, for me, I just know there's nothing quite like doing that physical act of, thank you, that physical act of, okay, God, I'm on my knees. Your will, not mine, be done. And I love saying that on my knees. It's powerful for me. And it does feel like a physical position of, okay, surrender. And sometimes we, and this sounds gross on the bathroom floor, but when I'm really desperate, I'll be on my knees and then I'll go down and I'll literally put my forehead on the ground and my arms out and I'll put my palms up. And it's just like, okay, my hands are open. Your will be done. Whatever you have for me. Because I do feel like, but for me, I need to get in that position of, okay, physically I'm surrendered. Have your way, HP, have your way. So, yeah, it does something to me. So I'm going to keep doing it.
I think there's a lot of right ways to get to God and having that relationship. I do not get on my knees. That just hasn't been something I've done or felt inspired to do. I usually sit. I sit, and what I think it's about for me is it's a type of a ritual or symbol, right? It's a gesture, a demonstration of I am seated. I am here. I am ready for you. Then that is my preferred physical demonstration or ritual of how I show myself and my higher power that I'm ready to receive now. That's my experience with that. What about physical positions, like versus seated versus on the knees or laying down or whatever it is, or in the car or whatever it is?
Else, another question? Yes. So the question is, when meditating, how do we know we're getting an answer from God, or to talk about just the answers? Yeah. You can.
It's a great question, and it's totally a practice. Sometimes I meditate, and it's a fail, man. Like, it's a straight-up fail. Like, I am itchy, twitchy, moving around, thinking about everything that's got to go on. I'm in a hurry, and my meditation sucks, you know? And I only meditate for 5 minutes. I'm still figuring out how to sit still. And so it's really a practice. I mean, sometimes I'm doing it, and I don't get much of anything, I don't think. It's probably maybe I got some sort of benefit unconsciously. So what I would say is, you know, be flexible in allowing it to happen. You know, whether you're really chattering in your mind or you're quiet enough, you know, and just trust that the information it'll come. It's just a practice. Some days you're going to get something that's going to, you know, rock your socks, and you're going to be like, yes, let's go get this day. And there'll be another day where it's like, okay, check, we did that. What's next? And that's just kind of the way it goes, so kind of the ebbs and flows of it. So I would say, you know, keep doing it and be patient and trust your intuition that you're getting it, you know.
Yeah, oh, I know we're almost done, but just on that note, for me, one thing that's really helpful when I do my little meditation, and I have such a new meditation practice, I think just even if I do it for a minute and focus on my breath, it's something that's better than nothing. But I'm still at early days, even 8 years in with my meditation practice. But for me, anything good, any good thoughts, anything that's loving, any encouragement, any warmth, any comfort, that all comes from my HP. And anything that's not good and if something doesn't bless me, then I know it's not from my HP. So when I'm doing the meditation practice, if it's, you should have done that, you got to do this. Oh my gosh, you don't have time. Like, oh gosh, your body, it's feeling gross today. Like all of that, I'm like, okay, thanks for sharing. God, what do you think? And so, thank you. So for me, it's goodness, goodness, goodness comes from HP, and everything else is a disease voice. So I hope that's helpful.
Okay, it's 18 minutes. It's the call for the final question. Does anybody else have a question? No more questions. Okay. Thank you to our timer and to you all for participating in this panel discussion. After the serenity prayer, would everyone please clear the room, as depending upon the timing, there may be another panel discussion right behind us. Thank you for allowing us to be of service. And let's everyone stand and hold hands for the serenity prayer.
Awesome, Michelle.